I'm Paul Riedner, and you're listening to CE5 Minneapolis, a series about what happens when a team of researchers attempts to prove that we are not alone. It's the behind-the-scenes look into how we can use consciousness to make human-initiated contact with cosmic civilizations here on Earth. This work weaves together our inner worlds and our outer world. You're listening to Episode 5. If this is the first episode that you've heard, you can go back and listen from the beginning on iTunes, Stitcher, or CE5Minneapolis.com. I'm making this episode from just outside Joshua Tree National Park in California. I'm here attending a week-long intensive Ambassador to the Universe training with Dr. Stephen Greer and about 25 other awesome folks. So we've completed 2 days of training so far, and already we've had plenty of exciting and interesting contact that I'll tell you about in the future. Today, Dr. Greer began teaching us remote viewing and some different techniques to use. So during the break in the lecture, he put an item inside of a bag and had us attempt to sense what was inside the bag. Nobody was able to get it right, but we took turns sharing our impressions, and some in the group were pretty close. I had a feeling that it was metal, and for some reason saw a vision of a wine opener. I wonder if it had anything to do with the fact that I haven't had a sip of alcohol for the last 2 weeks, since actually the last time that CE5 Minneapolis went out in the field. But anyway, many people got metal. James, another guy from Minnesota, got metal, and that it was cylindrical. It turned out to be Dr. Greer's night vision binoculars, which, by the way, are ridiculously fun to use. Anyhow, I'm looking forward to practicing this more. It's a really easy way to develop the skill that we are all, I guess, naturally gifted at when we're born, but we often lose it in childhood, and Dr. Greer calls it our birthright. So we'll be working on that every day. Speaking of remote viewing, my guest on this week's show is a natural at it. Dr. Kathy Forty is a clinical psychologist with stories for days. She trained with Dr. Greer last year and had some really incredible stories involving her knack with remote viewing and also about her near-death experience that led to her developing a one-of-a-kind healing technology with the help of multidimensional beings. When I explained to her that this podcast is intended to help newcomers and aspiring CE5ers take that next step to making contact and to forming teams, Kathy jumped right in to dispel the idea that this has to be complex. Here's Kathy.
Sometimes the best experiences happen when you least expect it, or you expect nothing to happen. And that was true when I was in Kauai a number of years ago. And I was staying at the house of the physicist Nassim Harriman from the Resonance Project. Nassim is a friend, and he and his wife were going to go out to dinner one day. I was staying at the house, and I decided, well, I'll stay back here because I was kind of tired. I'd been at the beach that day. And so I was out on the back patio there and their deck, and I was looking up at the stars, and I had the crystals, two crystal wands in my hand that I use in my technology, the Trinfinity 8. And so I was holding them in my hand and looking up at the sky and just kind of meditating. And all of a sudden it occurred to me, I said, you know, I don't think I've ever seen a UFO up in the sky. And I think I would really like to see one. You know, and I'm thinking this to myself. And of course, I didn't expect a UFO to come down. I just expressed that intent. But the intent must have been strong enough. And it was picked up. Because within a short period of time after expressing that intent, I saw an orb up in the sky. And of course, you know, I went through the whole thing. Is this a planet? It's not a plane. It's not moving like a plane. It's not a star. And, you know, it was like, talk to me. And it was started to come closer and occurred to me, oh, my God, this is a UFO. And I got kind of excited. And I was okay with that. And I stood up using these crystal wands and started calling it down like an air traffic controller. And I mean, it was a funny experience. I didn't know if anything was going to happen. But for some reason, if you're of like-minded higher consciousness, come on down. And it was getting closer, and it occurred to me that it might possibly land in their backyard. And I thought, are you okay with that? And I was okay with that. But then the thought popped into my mind, but should I not come back from this experience, which I was okay too, because I've had near-death experiences, Nassim and his wife Amber would totally freak out, not know what to do, and would be scared to death. And with that thought of concern for them, the UFO just did a zigzag and took off. And so when Nassim came home, I said to him, you know, I think I saw my first UFO in the sky. And he was very, very, you know, very nonchalant about it. And he says, yeah, we see them all the time here. And I said, really? And he goes, yeah, we think that there's an underground base here on Kauai. And he says, where did you see it in the sky? And I pointed to it. And he goes, oh, yeah, that's up by that mountain thing there. And that's that we've seen a lot. And he says, in fact, we've seen a lot of UFO craft here. And my little son draws them. So, you know, I knew at that point, oh, okay, intent. And I was kind of meditating out on the back porch there, the deck. And sure enough, yes, they picked that up. But, you know, that wasn't my first experience. I mean, it was my first experience actually seeing it in the sky. Mm-hmm. But when I was in my 20s, the middle of the night, I suddenly found myself inside a huge spaceship. And back in my 20s, I was not, you know, into UFOs. I was not into aliens. I was not into any of that stuff. It was long before I ever became a clinical psychologist. But I suddenly found myself in the ship, and I did not feel threatened. I did not feel like I was abducted or anything like that. I was inside the ship, and I could see beings that were very tall but very humanoid looking. And they were wearing what looked almost like a silver jumpsuit that was they were totally encased in. I remember there was no seams on it, and they had an upside down triangle patch. And I can't really remember exactly what the insignia was in that patch. I didn't really focus on that, but I was talking to the commander of the ship, and he was showing me around the ship, and he was showing me, I saw other beings on the ship that had little gold bands in their ears. And this was like way long before the era of Bluetooth, you know. And I was told it wasn't a speaking thing, but it was just an all-knowing thing, that these were for intercommunication on the ship. And so that everybody could communicate with each other. So this was some type of technology they had then. And the commander was talking to me as one scientist to another, as if he already knew me. And he felt familiar, but I did not have any memory of him. And I wasn't a scientist, so I thought this was unusual. He was talking to me as one scientist to another. He was talking to me a little bit about the mission, but I can't remember the details of it. But suddenly, as I was leaving, there was a tremendous exchange of energy between this commander of the ship and myself. And it was so strong that it woke me up in my physical body, and it felt exactly like one was having a sexual orgasm. It was so strong, but there was no sex involved between us, but that's how strong this energy was. So I remember kind of, you know, filing it away that, wow, that seemed like a really lucid dream, whatever that was. I don't really know what that was about, because I wasn't into that stuff, but kind of filed it away.
You didn't explore it at the time anymore?
No, I didn't. And I really didn't have anybody to talk to it about. I thought, you know, was that my imagination?
Yeah.
You know, you go through that kind of stuff. But I remembered it being so clear because of the fact that it woke me up, and I could still feel the reverberations of that energy just flowing through me.
Yeah.
So when I went to the training with Dr. Geer, this was in April of 2014, we were out in the desert.
And can you tell us how you learned about Dr. Geer's training?
I heard about it through a friend who had said something about, oh, he's actually doing these trainings, you know, where you're bringing forth and communicating on a higher level with. And I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. And, you know, I remembered my incident, when I was in my 20s with this commander of the spaceship. And I also remembered Nassim thing when I was out there in Kauai. And I thought, I didn't have any fear of it. Actually, the day before I was supposed to go there, I thought, I'm going to focus in, you know, because I read all his materials. I'm going to focus in and try to create, see if I can bring one down before I go there. And as I'm focusing on this, all of a sudden, the whole house starts shaking. And I thought, oh my God, they've landed on the roof. But I, little did I know, it was a California earthquake.
So you started an earthquake? No.
So when I went to Dr. Greer's, you know, it was one of the first nights we were all in a circle in the desert there, and we're meditating. And it was just after the meditation, he said, there's a very tall being here. He's actually a commander of a ship. And he's standing in between Ann Geltheimer and who was ever on the other side of her, which happened to be me, but he didn't know my name at the time. It was the first night. And I sensed there was something there, but I didn't know if this was the commander from way back in my when I was in my 20s. But I didn't want to say anything because it, you know, it sounded ridiculous. Oh yeah, he's mine. You know? And, you know, and so I asked for a sign that night when I went back to my cabin, and I said, if this is the commander from when I was in my 20s, then give me a sign, make it known to me, come visit me, you know, let me know. In the middle of the night, I woke up, and as clear as could be, the room was lit up with streams of light coming down through the ceiling. I mean, it was like 1,000 beams of light, and they were going straight into my heart chakra. And the feeling was just so incredible. It was like waves of love just rolling off of my back and in my body. And it was an ecstatic bliss experience. And, you know, I took that as a sign. Okay, this was the same commander. Perhaps we had had some dealings in the past or something like that. But it was interesting because in my 20s, it was identified in the lower chakras, you know, as a sexual thing. And now, in my life where I am now, it was identified in a higher chakra, in the heart chakra. And that's where I was basing a lot of our stuff, through love, through the heart connection, and so forth. So it was, that was an interesting first beginning, you know, to our out in the desert with Dr. Greer. So I knew, okay, we've got some beings here that are with us, and so we had some interesting experiences that time.
Our team in Minneapolis, we have four team members, brand new. We've all done it before, and now we're learning how to be a team. Mm. So the last time we were out, we each had different, very subtle experiences, columns of light that Kevin saw. I felt like I was touched. I thought it was raining, and on my cheek. There were some.
True, sometimes you do feel like something is touching you.
Yeah.
Yes, very soft, very, you know, like nudging, we're here. Yeah, and it's never doesn't feel intrusive. It just feels,
subtle though, right?
Yes, yes.
And we're trying to understand how to confidently share either subtle senses or things that occur during a meditation, and understanding the difference between what is imagination and what is contact?
Yeah, that's always a tough one for people starting out. You know, I have a background in remote viewing. So when I went to Dr. Greer's thing, you know, he was teaching us how to remote view. And so, you know, I already knew how to do that, but I hadn't done it for quite a while. I hadn't really focused on it. And one time I lived up in Northern California in the Palo Alto area. And it was a New Year's Eve party, and I met Russell Targ from the Stanford Research Project, where they taught the military. They were doing the quote remote viewing, sending people, giving them coordinates and telling them to report back what they were seeing. And of course, people who were giving them the coordinates knew what was at those coordinates, but the people who were doing the remote viewing didn't. So he told me, oh, I can teach it to anybody. So he did. He taught me it. And you know, I experimented with it somewhat. And then I kind of put it on the, you know, the back burner. So when I went to Dr. Greer, I said, oh, okay, let's do some remote viewing. And I suddenly saw when I was doing remote viewing, we were just going out into the cosmos. And immediately I found myself out near a huge planet with two moons. And he wasn't leading us through it to look like for a planet with two moons or anything like that. But I found myself out with a planet with two moons. And I'm quickly thinking through my mind, what planet has two moons? And without going any further, I just knew immediately that I was outside Saturn. Although I couldn't see the rings from my angle, I was outside Saturn. And outside with these two moons was a huge space station. I mean, mammoth, mammoth. We're talking about the size of a city, big. And I could see it as clear as could be, and I found myself inside it. Now, interesting enough, once I was inside this space station, and I knew it wasn't ours because I could see beings on the space station that some looked humanoid, but some did not. So it was sort of interplanetary, whatever it was. And I could see out of the ship as if there was some type of bay window, but I knew that what looked like glass to me was not really glass, that if I was on the outside of the ship looking in, I would not see a window. It would be some weird type of fiber optics. And when I was on the ship, I was seeing people at work, and there was this one area I was drawn to, and there was these actually were smaller beings, and they had kind of like a porpoise-like skin, you know, like a porpoise mammal. Mm-hmm. And as I was getting closer, they were working on what to me looked like some type of satellite device, but I could see plasma-like rods inside. And I'm not sure if they were repairing it or they were doing something to it. And as I got closer, you know, I'm thinking to myself, what's this for? And as clear as could be, I heard in my mind one of the beings say to me, it's to defer weaponry in space. Now, as soon as I heard that, I remembered back in the 70s when, you know, between Russia and the United States was racing to go to the moon and show who had the prowess, you know, in space. And of course, the Russians were ahead of us, you know, but we wouldn't admit to that. And we were to show the Russians our might. We were launching nuclear missiles at the moon. And it was reported back, if you can do your research on this, you'll find this, that all of them were defused. They never reached the moon. And I remember thinking that, did this defuse that type of weaponry in space? Because just as a side, I remember meeting an astronaut or somebody who worked in NASA many years ago, and he told me about bases being on the moon that were not ours. You know, I think he had a couple drinks too many and he was divulging secrets that probably he shouldn't have. But I remember at the time, this was back in the 80s, revealing this. And I was like, oh, my gosh, there's a dark side of the moon and there is bases there. And, you know, maybe that's why we've never been asked to go back. We've been kicked off, you know, because here we were launching nuclear missiles at the moon.
Right.
You know, it's like babies playing with dynamite. So anyway, when these creatures showed me that this was to defuse weaponry in space, I immediately said, oh, our government would see this as a weapon against what they have. And they would take this as a hostile thing. And so I'm just thinking to myself, who programs this technology? And he, as clear as could be, they said, no one does. It taps into source and always knows the right humanitarian thing to do. Well, wow. The answer just blew me away, because this is consciousness-assisted technology. You know, and that day, Stephen Greer was talking about consciousness-assisted technology, or the next day he was, and I thought, do I tell him about this thing that I saw, you know, on Saturn, this space, you know, this thing? You know, people are going to think that, oh, this is, you know, why is all this stuff happening to her, and has she been holding out on us? Because actually some people did think I was holding out. But I thought, since he's talking about consciousness-assisted technology, this is probably the right time to bring something like that up. So within the group mode, in the afternoon, I mentioned this experience I'd had the night before while I was out remote viewing. And Dr. Greer got very quiet. And he says, I want all of you to listen very closely to what Kathy has just said. He says, I have been on that space station on Saturn. Yeah. He said, a number of years ago, our government discovered it. It was there. It's been there for a long time. And any pictures that come back from Saturn are that they're scrubbed. So you cannot see that space station that's there. And he then mentioned, then he went on to explain exactly what I saw inside the spaceship, about the fiber optics, the glass, and so forth like that. And so I thought, oh, well, that's validated. Now, I did not ask him, how did you get to be there? Were you there also in a remote viewing mode or something like that? He didn't say. Mm-hmm. But I know that there are beings out there, and they are trying to not let us destroy ourselves. You know, it's like a much more evolved, knowledgeable consciousness that is trying to be very gentle with children who are fooling around with some very dangerous materials. And what happens to us happens to them. And so, you know, I was very conscious of this. And then I had another experience where I also remote viewing, where I found myself outside the sun. And I never thought of the sun this way, but the sun is a huge stargate. There is openings on the sun that actual spaceships go through from this dimension to another dimension. And when I saw this, I thought, oh, this is interesting. And I saw one huge spaceship going through. And since then, you know, after I had this experience, I did look, and they said there's certain types of emissions that they see coming from the sun that are very unusual. And they might be ejections of craft coming through. And of course, if it is craft, they're certainly not going to admit it. But what they showed me was craft going through. And so I decided in this remote viewing stage to hitch a ride on one of the craft going through to see what it was like. And it was like going through a warp speed tunnel. And I came out into a dimension of the most incredible colors you'd ever seen. And on the exit of this wormhole or stargate or whatever, there was like a federation of ships lined up in an arc, and they were scanning all the ships coming through with some type of beam of light, of energy, and they were identifying the ships coming through. Like some ships lit up with maybe a white ray, some with a purple. The one that I was hitched to lit up with a violet ray. And I kind of knew in that moment it was some type of strange quarantine thing. They were scanning that there was no contamination coming from this, our dimension, into the next dimension. And then I saw ships that were coming out. So it was sort of like, you know, like the Panama Canal type thing, you know, in and out. But they had to go through kind of a checks and balance locks before they could, you know. And I remember, so I started, and I hadn't talked to Nassim Harriman in a long time. And so I came across some stuff where Nassim, they came across some ancient Mayan relics that showed on it the sun, and this entryway in the sun that showed, even the Mayans knew a long time ago, this was a stargate.
Wow.
So that kind of confirmed it for me. I mean, whether science can confirm that or not, I don't know. I mean, there's certainly things our government is not going to tell us if indeed, you know, they know or they can confirm it or so forth like that. But it was very, very real for me. So, you know, now when I do those experiences, when I was at Dr. Greer's, I had one more, which is interesting. I found myself remote viewing over a military base somewhere in Arizona. And it was dark, but I could see the insignias on the planes that were definitely American, the flags, so forth like that. And I had the split second of knowing you do not want to be remote viewing over a military base. Get the hell out of there. because on some level, I knew they had tracking ability to lock into remote viewers. And don't tell me how I knew that, but I did know that. And so I said, I would rather know where the ET bases are then. And immediately, I found myself drawn to this mountain that they said, look for what looks almost like an artificial mountain. You'll recognize it. And I thought, an artificial mountain? And was it moved there? How's it done? How's this done? But I didn't get that answered. All I saw was myself being drawn to this artificial mountain and going down hundreds of miles straight down, even though there was no opening like a regular hole, you know, to go down. It was like going down through layers, down into the earth. And I could see miles and miles and miles of tunnels down there. And I saw equipment that actually made tunnels so simple that it turned the walls into some type of glassine type thing. So it wasn't like heavy duty, you know, like we build tunnels across the East River in New York or so forth like that. This was nothing like that. This was like it just moved earth and solidified it almost. And these tunnels look like they were everywhere underneath the United States. They may go on for thousands of miles for all I know. But when I was down there, I was in one tunnel where I saw very strange writing on the wall. It sort of looked like hieroglyphics, but I knew it wasn't Egyptian hieroglyphics. It might have been some type of Sumerian or cuneiform or something, some other language. And it was written on the wall. And as I was looking at this, I looked around one of the corners. And there, which seems bizarre, was a huge grasshopper-like being sitting on a pillow meditating. It was an altar. It was sort of like a sanctuary. And I could see his antennas going, you know, up in the air, kind of moving. He looked at me, and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is a grasshopper. So, you know, I wasn't scared, but I was just shocked.
How big was he?
He was, I mean, you're pretty tall. What are you, 6?
6'5".
6'5"? I'm sure he was over 6 feet. Yeah. Wow. You know, we're not talking about little ones on the ground. This was a tall, tall being. And I could see because of how big his torso was, even though it was sitting on this in lotus position and it was meditating. And then, you know, it just kind of smiled at me without smiling. And I suddenly found myself propelled out of there. It was sort of like, you really don't need to be down here, you know? I know I didn't propel myself out. I think I was propelled out of there. Like, you've seen enough. Okay. And I found myself back in, you know, back in my own conscious body. And I did mention something like that to Dr. Greer. You know, I was starting to get a little, okay, so maybe I should just tell him these things that are happening. And, you know, he'll either say you're crazy or not. And he goes, and he says, ah, the grasshopper beings. He said, those are the healers. He said, there's different beings that have different specialties. And the grasshoppers, that race is really more focused on healers. And since I am in the healing arts, my profession, I thought it was kind of interesting that I would track to you know, my first being down there would be. I did not see any others, but I did not spend a long time investigating these tunnels. It was like I was drawn to one area. And maybe because I was in the state of remote meditation, I was connecting to somebody else in that state as well.
So it's interesting because I feel like we all have different capabilities and skill sets, right? Gifts, mm-hmm. as people. And I'm curious of your opinion on how, what happens when you're doing CE5 in terms of our teams, we feel like we're getting more aware, either we're learning how to perceive this different sort of light that I've heard Dr. Greer talk about, or are our eyes actually evolving and developing, like learning how to perceive these more subtle energies that we weren't able to perceive before?
Well, I think the more you're in meditation, and Dr. Greer will definitely, you know, agree with this, you are opening yourself up. You are becoming more aware. You know, you're tuning out all that the garbage in our life, in your day-to-day life, And really listening to that small, still voice in between and connecting with one's higher self. And you do feel differently. I mean, I was much more intuitive a whole week of doing nothing but meditation, you know, than probably I am in day to day. I use my intuition all the time, but there, you know, I could feel people's things more. I could kind of see what certain things that were happening. A remote viewing came extremely easy for me. So I know that, you know, if I spend large amounts of time in meditation, those capabilities are absolutely going to strengthen. And, but, you know, people says, you know, taking the time for that, you know, and some people have a hard time blocking out all of that, the noise of life, you know.
Luckily, there's other ways to get in that meditative state, right? Other than just sitting still and being quiet.
That's right. Sometimes I just go out to the ocean and just connect with the ocean. And that can be one's meditation too. It doesn't necessarily have to mean sitting in a lotus position, closing one's eyes and doing om or something, yeah. You know? It's just quieting oneself, you know? And some people find the same thing within prayer. Mm-hmm. So it might be different for each. It's not like you have to perform a puja ceremony mm-hmm. the whole time. But, you know, I did get more into trying to learn to do the puja ceremony. So to bring that in.
One thing that I've been struggling with is explaining this thing. Right? So I've been getting lots of practice in it. And I approached one of my friends who serves on my college like committee for a reunion. Mm-hmm. So I volunteered to present what I've been working on and what CE5 is in consciousness, right? At our class reunion this June. But you know, that the amount of questions it generated was much greater than the amount of information I gave, you know? I mean,
it's like opening a wormhole.
Yeah. So I got the practice I was looking for. One thing that struck me is her understanding. The word belief came up quite a bit, and she explained to me. She's like, you know, if you just had this religious experience and you wanted to hold a prayer, I wouldn't stop you. I would support you. And if you started to do all the references were religious in nature, right? Which I understand, but I'm trying to resolve how belief works in this field.
Well, look at the Vatican even came out, was it this past year, saying that, yes, that there's most likely beings on other planets. I did the research. You can find the Google that. Mm-hmm. And that they don't believe that discredits anything in their religious dogma or so forth, their belief system about God, you know. It just means that... you know, it's like there's other countries, there's other worlds, there's other dimensions and so forth, and they all have a connection to something that's divine as well. So it doesn't go against, you know, religion, and I think it actually affirms it even more. And NASA came out this past week as well that, yes, there might be others, you know, beings on other planets and worlds too. So I think they're kind of prepping themselves for something that's looks like it's ready to come out.
Right.
You know, it's like greasing the
greasing the wheels, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it's going to be hard enough for everyone to, you know, get on board with. So I think
it's like President Obama saying on Jimmy Kimmel, you know, it's and you know, Kimmel said, he came out and said that Obama asked him to ask him about the UFO thing. You know, that wasn't just spur of the moment. That was planned.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes. Yeah, so you can find, you know, plenty on that. Kimmel said he was asked to ask him about that. So I think even he said, well, that, you know, this is what they tell me to say. I can't say anymore. So what he was really saying was pretty truthful. You know, I don't have all the answers. And this is, you know, the standard line I'm supposed to say.
Interesting. It could be an interesting year or two. I don't know the time frame, but I've, you know, people are talking about it so much now. And
yeah, I think it was more of a taboo subject before, but I think everybody is fascinated to some degree. You still find those out there that it scares them so much to think about, because you know, they have to throw away their paradigm of their world, and most people don't. A lot of people don't like to shake their world and their belief systems. It's just too frightening, and you know that's okay. You know, it's and I respect that. You know, we're all at a different place.
There's early adopters, and then there's the followers.
Right. You know, and then they talk about all these, you know, abductee things and fear mongering things. Now, you know, some of that stuff is probably disinformation as well, you know, and some people could say, you know, when I found myself on board that ship when I was in my 20s, you know, someone might identify that as an abductee type of situation where I didn't find it. I just found myself on there. I didn't find anybody taking me of, you know, against my free will or anything else. I did not have any negative experiences, but, you know, everybody's framework of their experiences is seen through a different lens. You know, when I was a clinical psychologist, you know, what one situation to one person might be, you know, totally nothing, and someone else is totally traumatized by it. So, you know, I don't discount it, but I just say, you know, it's different for everyone.
Do you have any novel, maybe suggestions or ways of thinking about meditating for someone who wants to start and doesn't know how?
Well, there's a lot of good meditation classes out there, or meditation videos or tapes or so forth. But
or even thinking about the benefits of it outside of, you know, doing this work.
Well, you know, the benefits have been proven, how it, you know, brings down, you know, high blood pressure, you know, it's a good way to alleviate stress. I mean, they've done studies on the immune system beneficial effects of that. So, you know, that's already out there. You just have mm-hmm. to Google that stuff and you'll find plenty of it, you know. And I think that it's just that everything is so stressful these days because everything has been stepped up. You know, energy, things are happening faster, they're manifesting faster. You might say the shit is hitting the fan faster. You know, people are going through traumatic life experiences now more than ever. It's because it's part of that evolutionary process we're going through right now. So if there's anything you've been avoiding, it's going to come raging to the surface and you're going to have to deal with it. And, you know, how you deal with it, you know, you can be overwhelmed and, you know, check out mentally, and or get some chronic illness, you know, and take it in that way. Or you can just learn to release it and work through it, too. You know, sometimes it's easier on some days than others. We all have our stuff we're going through right now. And, you know, as much as we can all handle. And I look at people and, you know, people say, oh, that person's got a charmed life. Never. You never know what's going on behind the scenes. You just never do. And what may be catastrophic to you may not be catastrophic to you. But so I think we all have to be cognizant and, empathic to all, because we're all in this together. Yeah. And that's, I think, what the whole ET experience is also showing us. We are all in this together, not just on planet Earth, but on cosmic levels, dimensional levels. You know, when I had my near-death experience, I had multidimensional beings working with me to bring forth a technology that I had no clue about. And that, you know, and so I knew then that maybe that's why the guy on the spaceship was talking to me, one scientist to another, because possibly in past lives or so forth, I was a scientist, you know, and it's just relearning what you knew in another lifetime and bringing parts of that into this lifetime, because we, you know, it's all what we do.
How is that new project going?
Oh, that's done. I have a technology that's built on mathematical codes, because mathematics encompasses everything. Everything has a mathematical signature, and that's what they were teaching me. And math was my worst subject in school. So they were teaching me how to code every single substance, you know, thought, mineral, element, and so forth, to stream it through the body as pure information to the body to create vibrational change, whether it be on a physical, emotional, spiritual, or even cosmetic level. And, you know, people can go and it's www.trinfinity8.com. You know, you can learn all about the technology there. It's, you know, I don't need to discuss it in this particular interview here. But, you know, that all came from working with multidimensional beings from my near-death experience. So, you know, that was, and they told me, you know, I had to go through the tunnel for them to be able to merge with me to be able to do, apparently, for them to integrate. And these were a whole bunch of very dimensional beings that were kind of geeky, you know, very scientific, and bringing forth information that I had no knowledge of.
I'll tag the show notes with information about how, you know, people can find, you know, your work. I really enjoyed, I read a couple of your blog articles, really, really fascinating stuff. Yeah. So I just want to thank you for being on the show, and you're some inspiring stories. I can't wait to share it.
Great. Thank you.
To subscribe and listen to upcoming episodes of CE5 Minneapolis, you can go to iTunes, or you can go to our website, ce5minneapolis.com. We're also on Stitcher now, so go check it out if you got an Android phone. The music on this and future episodes is from Rhymesayers Entertainment, a Minneapolis-based independent hip-hop record label. We hope you'll support their artists if you like some of the music that you heard on the show. They do it right.
Constantly keep elevating the hustle, the music, the ethic, muscle, the movements, the methods.
Hey, Twin Cities, hit me up if you would like us to speak at your event and get an insider's view of what is really going on and how you can help and get involved. So what's going to be on the next episode is still up in the air, or in the universe's hands, as I continue to train with Dr. Greer. Today, he encouraged us to remote view any past events that we wanted to re-engage with. So I connected with and sent an invitation to the cloud from episode 2, or the intelligence behind the cloud, the ship. I'm really hoping that they will accept my invitation and that we can actually meet each other on a personal level. So send good thoughts, good peeps. By the way, the group was enveloped by a trans-dimensional ship tonight. I can't wait to see what tomorrow brings. Finally, if you're down with this project, please rate and review the show on iTunes. It helps a lot. Thanks, everybody. Your support's critical. I'm Paul Riedner. See you on the next episode of CE5 Minneapolis.